Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
Okay, Charlotte. How you doing? Okay?
Oh, yeah. Doing great. Thank you.
Well,
hope you're well, too.
We've had a very tragic and eventful week because of the Las Vegas Strip shooting out there. The Mandalay South Hotel Casino. And it's just been really tragic for a number of families. I believe the number now is 58 were killed, and there's close to 500, I think, were wounded or injured by the shooter. We have Stephen Paddock, firing from the 32nd floor. Some people say he acted alone. Others say that there were multiple shooters. We have the soundtrack that people picked up at different times. There was a cabbie that was down below the Mandalay Bay Resort hotel there. And she had a recording going in her cab. So that has been a source and of listening to the different shots when they occurred. Now, it seemed like to me, and maybe you can verify me this, I know you've been an Army officer in the U.S. Army, and you've had, experience on the range and so forth? And maybe you
Navy's
oh,
firearms,
that's right.
Yeah.
Now, how long did you spend in the Navy?
Well, that's a long time. Long enough to acquire, George, I'm so sorry. I don't want to talk about
that. Well, some of your work there is sort of classified, I know, so we won't dwell on that. But then you also transferred over to the Army, and so you've had experience with Army and weapon systems, right, and on the range. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been an arms room officer. I've been in charge of the shooting ranges with the first sergeant executing all the boots-on-the-ground stuff, but I've been present for a lot of weapons firing.
Oh, okay. And you're actually – you went to, ordnance school at one time?
Yes, I did. I went to the Army's ordnance officer basic course.
Okay, so we're not talking to someone that doesn't know anything at all about it. And what were your impressions after hearing some of the firing that occurred there during that? It's about 9 or 11 minutes long. Did you hear automatic fire?
Okay. At first I didn't hear clips that were long enough for me to decide one way or the other what I was hearing.
Right.
And now that. But I do believe it was the one that was captured from, this was one that there was a video associated with the weapons fire.
Okay.
And the people's movement. And I thought I could hear two weapons being discharged at the same time because there seemed to be two different rates of fire occurring. And, I wasn't there. And I'd rather, talk to the eyewitnesses.
Sure. But listening to the recordings that are available there seemed to be to me, and I'm not an expert in this, but I heard a lower pitched automatic weapon, but then I heard a higher pitched. My reading and research so far, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but the lower pitch seems to be an M60, which is belt fed, and it fires at a lower rate than an M16, and seemed to be a higher pitched sound. What is your experience?
I recognized one of them. They said, I recognized both. That's all I can really say to that, George.
Right. Okay.
I have perforated eardrums, and it's sometimes difficult for me, but I recognize both. So, yeah, M16 doesn't sound far off for me. And as far as the rest of it, I just don't know. But one thing that I'm very curious about is why in all the photographs that were released of the room, why were there no spent cartridges on the floor? Because right. with that kind of, you know, heat and fire and smoke would be there, I mean, it would just have to be something unbelievable.
Would the sound be overwhelmingly loud to anyone in the hallway?
I would imagine. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
He was firing out the window, so some of the sound went out the windows, right, with the, you know, out the
building. I wouldn't want to fire one without ear protection in a closed room. I wouldn't want to do that. That's just me, though.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's hard to tell. And I'm just going to say I don't know one way or the other, but I'm definitely wanting to hear from the eyewitnesses. And I've, just like during the 9/11 investigation, this has affected a lot of people. And I want to hear from more than just what is coming across today. I want to hear what emerges in the week and the month to come.
Right. Well, he had a vantage point from the 32nd floor. And the latest information that I've been able to pick up is that he wanted that room earlier than he actually received it, but someone was in the room. So I don't think he moved into the room until Saturday, see, which would be a day before that night that he unleashed this barrage on the crowd down there at that country music venue. And so that's what that's some of the latest stuff now. Now, he was a 64-year-old. A single person. He had a girlfriend that was Filipino, but had worked in casinos, I think, over the years. I think they met up in Reno and struck up a love relationship, and they began to start living together, as I understand the different reports coming from the different news publications and so forth. And then there's this assertion that ISIS has come out and said that he was converted to Islam. To ISIS itself. And, and then they reasserted that again. So they've done this twice. And, we have different opinions on ISIS.
Let's put it in context of time. He was also on some sort of drug. I think it was called, diazepam or.
Yes.
Something which would loosen up his inhibitions, I would imagine, and some even say the side effects of it are pretty extreme. It's interesting the timing that he was put on that drug and how he comes to, what story did he tell the doctor that would allow for him to be given such a powerful drug?
Right. And what has been your experience on these psychotropic drugs that people are on? Does it cause problems? Can there be psychotic fits set off? Or I know we've been interviewed Peter R. Bragan, author of Medication Madness. We've interviewed Bart Billings, who has extensive, experience with psychotropic drugs. What would be your opinion? Would that be
I don't have to tell you my opinion. I can tell you it's right there on the box in the form of a black box warning.
Yeah.
And it says it causes that these types of psychotropic drugs, not valiums, I think that's a different class, but the psychotropic drugs, like the antidepressants and the antipsychotics and all that, it says right on there, or it should say on the antipsychotics. I honestly don't know if it says it
on the insert. You're talking about the insert of the...
Yeah,
okay.
The black box warning, and it says that it causes suicidal and potentially homicidal, or why not homicidal indications? You know, if it causes suicidality, that's what they call it, suicidality. Mm-hmm. And if it causes suicidality, then what's to stop it from causing homicidality or whatever? It's a mind drug. And and there's our society is currently being inundated with opiates and with drugs, prescription drugs. And it's a very scary time.
Right. Now they say he was quite a heavy drinker, according to many people they have witnessed him being around him in the casinos. Of course, they usually bring free drinks, but he was a drinker, okay? And so when you combine alcohol with these psychotropic drugs or whatever, depressants, it can be even a greater problem, I understand.
Yeah, that's what I've read as well. And Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, she's getting older these days, but she's been devoted her life to that very topic, George.
Right, right. We've interviewed her, what, two or three times? I forget the number.
Right, Dr. Ann Blake Tracy. Yeah. If anybody wants to interested in reading about, she wrote a very good book about when Prozac started turning her friends and family, and she lived it. So she did, and she's also a science, you know, science oriented and all that. She's just a very good person. But like I said, she's getting older these days, and but she's kept the fight up, so it's heartening.
Yeah, Dr. Ann Blake Tracy is considered to be an expert witness in trials. When there's
she doesn't want to be called Dr. Ann Blake Tracy anymore. She just wants to be called Ann.
Right. Okay. But Ann is considered to be an expert witness on these matters, and so she's written a book. She's written extensively about this and testified also. Well, now we have a man then that's 64. He's drinking a lot of alcohol, maybe on depressants and so forth, that could create problems. And then we have information that he was recruited by ISIS, see. But nobody's coming forward with absolute proof except ISIS. What's that?
What about Gladio?
Well, now here's what we know about Gladio. This is getting into the big picture, right? Okay? This is causing your gun control advocates to come forward with proposals for more lockdown on guns, you know, a greater control of guns. Your other side with your gun rights people would be the people that were at that festival, see. And even a CBS vice president got fired for stating something like that about, you know, these country western fans or gun toters and so forth. And so it's sort of shaking out now. Where in the public arena, we have a discussion coming out of this tragic event about gun rights, okay, and gun control, gun rights, and so forth. And so you've got two distinctive groups there, and they're trying to propose something about the bump stock, I think, to Congress at this time. And I understand the bump stock does not increase it increases the firing ability a little bit, but not on the not equivalent to any automatic weapon. And I've had people that are in the gun business stating that the firing rate that they heard on the clips that were, you know, put forward from the event would not indicate a bump stock was used. It was, those were fully automatic weapons that were being fired, is what I'm getting the opinion from really well, you know what I mean, qualified gun people. So anyway, we have, another thing too. He supposedly broke the two suites windows with a hammer. Okay.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But I have a friend that's built maybe, his company's built maybe 30 high rise buildings. And he says that building has circuitry in it for fire purposes that would alert the head desk that there's a problem in that room. That's what he told me. They built into the window glass. Of fire protection, okay?
Right, but George, the firearms, don't you figure that he could shoot it out?
Well, someone said or put forward that the thing was not working on the main desk. Some of these things were not on or something. I don't know. It's a jumble mess on some of this. See what I mean? But also there was evidence or put forward a report that there was so much fumes from the automatic weapons that it set off the fire detector inside the room, okay? That was another assertion that occurred. But evidently, a security man got up there to him about 10 minutes after he quit firing and supposedly was shot in the leg through the door by the shooter, okay? And then that gave rise to him turning in that room, and they started closing in on that room at the time. We have video that's been put forward there on the fourth floor right next to the bottom sign in the front of the building. that shows flashes also of something. We don't know how reliable that
more
video is.
More remarkable is that the pyramid in released videos show a light beam into the sky and the nearby obelisk and the nearby Phoenix.
Okay.
You know, Vegas, there's a lot of bling.
They showed what now? Repeat that again.
In Vegas, there's a lot of windows and a lot of mirrors, a lot of reflective surfaces. I find it hard to, you know, it'd be easy to take that little reflector and put a sound effect to it. And I believe I did see a video like that, put a sound effect to that. And then I saw the video that it probably originally came from, and there was no firing. See, my understanding is that reflection was occurring even before there was any puzzled sound, no noise.
But there is that video. But you're getting so many different cross currents here. When we get back to the big discussion now, we've got a tremendous number of casualties, and those have to be dealt with, and the healing must begin. Of course. And so it's just so tragic that there were stories that have been put forward by people that have lost their loved ones. And also, Michael Savage interviewed a lady. She and her husband made it out of there, but there was a lady next to them. And, what she and her husband hypothesized that the woman was shot in the stomach, a very bad wound in the stomach, and died. But how they were standing in relationship to the Mandalay was not directly in the line of fire, and it would have had to be real tricky to get a bullet turning 90 degree, you know, to get that woman to hit where she was. So they're saying maybe there were other shooters somewhere in other areas from a different perspective.
And I'm not saying that my assertion is good or bad, but maybe it was a ricochet too. I mean,
right. Now that's true. I've been out at the range before and shot and had something come back at me on the firing line. Have you ever experienced that?
No, thank God, George,
I
haven't.
So I've done a lot of firing on a friend of mine used to own a rifle range here in Austin, Texas. And I basically had all the ammunition that I needed to fire out there. So I'd go out and fire mostly pistols, you know, PPKs and 38 special, stuff like that. So I've had different, you know, experiences. There were rocks at sometimes behind the targets and stuff where you might get something and never got hit, but stuff would come back in the general area sometimes. So ricochets can be very, very tricky, okay? So we get back to this. We're going to finish out another 5 or 6 minutes here and then switch over to our second 30 minutes will be Puerto Rico. Okay. So right now we've got people stating Anthony Schaefer today. Do you remember that name? We did a video up in New York of him at one of the 9/11 conferences. Anyway,
I can't remember the name.
Yeah, Anthony Schaefer today, he was part of Able Danger. And Able Danger was a secret intelligence operation run by the Army, and it's uncovering jihadists that were coming in, okay, and to the country. And they notified Anthony Schaefer and them notified the FBI and stuff of their information that they had about these jihadists. But what happened was it never went anywhere, you know. And so, but he was speaking today on one of the talk shows, he is of the opinion that this thing was a pretty large operation, and ISIS was involved, and this man was ISIS related or, you know, controlled by them or involved with them. And so he has information that we don't always have, okay. So anyway, that's pretty interesting coming from Anthony Schaefer. And he's pretty well respected in intelligence. He's retired now, Lieutenant Colonel Army, retired. And he's pretty well respected his opinions. But you do have this battle now going on between the left and the right and the gun control versus the gun rights people. And the Democrats have run in there just immediately before, you know, those people were out of the hospital and are advocating more and more gun control measures, see.
Well, that falls right in with what the long-term goal and objective is for people, the potential communist rulers that we have.
Right, right. So that's expected from that group. We still have, we had the county sheriff standing up the other day, Joe Lombardo, okay? And he said he declined to discuss too much of the evidence, but he said that he may have had assistance from an accomplice, okay? But they they don't want to disclose too much of their investigation, otherwise this accomplice might get away or whatever. And he added that Paddock had booked an apartment at a Las Vegas Octon Hotel overlooking another open air concert. And there's evidence now that he also booked some rooms up in Chicago for the Lollapalooza Festival in Chicago.
That is just setting us up to be monitored. All that is what's laid down by the special operation guys, psychological operation guys, to make sure that we all get monitored in our movement. That this is just horrible. This whole scenario, George, is so unbelievable to me.
I know
that,
it is.
I know people died. I know real people died, but I need to hear that. I need to know what. You know, I just, George, this is something else.
I know this is an operation possibly that is like the Gladio. Now, Todd Fletcher and I discussed this a number of years ago, and we started calling some of these mass shootings or whatever the American Gladio. See, now this thing has very, very powerful psychological effect on the public at large. Okay? And so it tensions the public. It upsets the public. It creates a lot of hate in the public sector, see, at large. And so we're going to be working through that as well, you know, as much as we could to try to get over this event. Okay? But, the Gladio, it has characteristics of an operation, according to many people that have looked at it. And, it's a PSYOP, you know, type, got characteristics of a PSYOP.
Yeah, George, why not? Why not have teams coming out of Israel or coming out of the Middle East?
Yeah.
Why not have teams coming out of this monstrosity of a government that, you know, set up secret prisons in my lifetime?
Right.
You know? Why not have groups of goons manipulating the population for the bread and circus? I mean, this is horrific, and I just think it's going to be decades. I'm afraid it's going to be like 9/11. I think the American people have a right to the video, the closed-circuit television TV of all the surveillance. I believe that should be played so that the public can put their mind at ease about how it was actually accomplished, because if those videos, those CCTV captures, you know, right, we need to see them. But of course, we're not going to, George. So therefore, this will drag on and on, just like the rest of the.
What they're doing already is they're focusing it on Stephen Paddock as the only sole shooter, and trying to close down the whole story in a line like that. That's what it appeared to be.
But the people that were there will know better, just like the people.
Yeah, but there are reports that they've been telling people not to talk and to be careful about who they talk to and trying to suppress what their opinions are. See what I mean? Now, you've got to remember, though, these are kicker type of people who love country music, and they're on that conservative gun right side. So they might be catching on to this more than any other groups, okay? And so I don't think they can put a lid on this thing. There's too many. There's millions of people investigating this on the web and up front and in person and live there in Vegas and so forth. And there's leaks coming in out of the casinos. There's rumors that many of the casino workers that they're at the Mandalay and so forth, they know more than what they can publicly state. They're telling individuals and friends a lot more than is being publicly stated by them. They can't do it publicly because their job, see. But there's a lot of things about multiple shooters that they know about, according to some sources, that are just not being publicly broadcast yet. So that's where we're at.
Well, sadly, sadly, we cannot trust the Trump administration. We can't trust the Trump administration to give us the lowdown any more than we could trust the Bush administration or the Obama administration.
That's correct.
It doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican in office. Our psychological operations that are being played out against the American people are going to continue, regardless of who's in the office.
It appears that that Trump is being, the information around him is being controlled. More so than it's all controlled by all the people around the president have an opportunity to control what he sees and reads sometimes. And we believe that Trump is being cut off from some news, but he does, you know, like Twitter and stuff like that. And he's got a daughter and other, children that probably talk to him and tell him a lot more than a lot of other presidents would have been getting. So we'll just have to see how this plays out. In the long run. Do you have any final, we've got about a minute or two on this subject, then we're going to move to Puerto Rico. Do you have any final, opinion, Charlotte, on the Vegas?
Not an opinion, but I would like to share my sorrow and my condolences to people that have been affected by this tragedy. And, Godspeed to all of you that help, and Godspeed to all of you that need healing. I'm so sorry this happened.
Right. Well, boy, it was tragic, all right. And it's just unfortunate that this happened like it did. Okay, we're going to start picking up on our second subject for this second part of this first hour. And we're going to talk about the Puerto Rican government debt crisis, okay? And my gosh, Charlotte, that that debt is horrendous, isn't it? And
yes.
Didn't Trump, he traveled over there recently, I think Tuesday, this last Tuesday, he was in Puerto Rico. And did he make any statements or anything that were relevant?
Yes, it was captured by the LaRouche PAC October 6th. This just came out on Sergeant Report. President Donald Trump, near the end of his visit to Puerto Rico, October 3rd, stated the obvious truth about the situation. Devastation has wiped out the estimated $72 billion in Puerto Rican debt, along with the entire infrastructure base of the island. Its economy must be rebuilt for the people. Wall Street has gone ballistic. The president's assertion of reality has called the question on the Wall Street system. The Fool LaRouche plan of action goes on and on to say. But he recommends sort of a Glass-Steagall credit creation, economic rebuilding. I don't know. But
well, we have about 3.4 million people, the population. We have a subsistence income. We have the household income, okay, running at about, it's actually declined since the last poll or survey, I should say. And it's down to about $18,000 per household now. And what I see is that Puerto Rico, over the last several decades, they've lost credits and advantages and discounts from the United States government. And then in addition to that, they borrowed heavily to pay to fund their economy. So their economy was not producing in a positive way. So they were using borrowed funds to pay at the overheads. And many high-salaried people were benefiting from this borrowing. And so you had the upper level, the elite people that control the government and so forth, getting very, very high salaries. Everybody else in Puerto Rico was making a subsistence income, you know. And so that's basically the way that it's unfolded. And now there's well over $70 billion in debt. And there's about $50 billion in pension obligations right now. And that's not counting the damages that were caused by the hurricane. See? So Puerto Rico has been devastated not only before the hurricane by debt, but now by the hurricane in physical damage. Okay? And go ahead, Charlie.
No, I was going to say, well, Trump was pretty stand up kind of guy to say that the Puerto Rican debt to Wall Street is wiped out.
Well, he just said that. That's not wiped out. They're there. They want that debt paid. See, that was just a figure of speech, I think. But there's what we can identify one individual. Intercept recently published an article, okay, and they identified one individual that's holding nearly $1 billion worth of debt, okay, and these are hedge fund operators out of New York City, and they bought up debt at different prices over the years, okay, and so they are very, very rich and very influential, but they are out to always collect that debt 100 cents on the dollar, okay? And so they don't fool around. They'll grab up anything of value and sell it off if they're in default of the debt and so forth. And so you've got a barracuda, group of hedge fund operators out of New York that are going out here and just buying up the bonds and so forth. These are discounted heavily sometimes because nobody wants them because they don't think that they can collect on them, see. But this investor by the name of Clariman, who's described as the Oracle of Boston, has a history of buying unpopular or distressed assets on the cheap in hopes of a payday. And his company manages over $30 billion in assets. And he's known as the top campaign contributor in New England, has been a major donor in Republican politics in Massachusetts, so forth. But he's a big money man, and he's got a horrifically large amount of debt. And so the Puerto Rican people, I'm looking at some of the statistics that were put out, and they've got what they call a partnership, okay? You remember over the years, Charlotte, we've been doing it for 4 or 5 years at least, these public-private partnerships. You remember those?
Yeah, the three P's, when we finally kind of put that together and figured out the model.
Yes, yes. But also what we found in our studies and reporting over the years was that the Bilderberg Group is advocating those for a long time, okay? And then also, in addition, the World Economic Forum is also advocating the same thing. And those are some of the same overlapping groups at times. We're talking about the Bilderberg Group is 130 or 40 of the top powerful people in the world. And then the Davos meeting at Davos, the World Economic Forum, is made up of about 2,500 of the leading corporations in the world. But they both advocate public-private partnerships. Now I start digging down into Puerto Rico, and what do we come up with? We come up with a government agency called the Puerto Rican Public-Private Partnerships Authority. You see what I mean? Whole authority has been created, a whole governmental authority built part of the government of Puerto Rico to administer the sell-off of some of their very, very, major assets. And so I did more study today and found out the airport has been leased out for 40 years, okay? And what's interesting about the airport is that there are two people, two lessees, the people that leased it. One group is out of Mexico, 60% controller of the lease. The other one's 40% controller out of Dusseldorf, German interest, okay? And there's the lease agreement. I haven't even begun to even read that thing. It's over 760 pages long.
Wow.
And they, of course, promised to put up millions in front and then to, develop the airport. Now, here's the thing about the airport. Before the Puerto Rican government even got into this, this leasing operation, okay, it was the most, it was the busiest airport in the Caribbean area. And what had happened was over the years, most of your major airlines had started flying in there and using that as a hub to further distribute through commuter aircraft to the small islands. The islands didn't have as long a runway, so the major carriers could fly their larger craft into San Juan Airport, and then from there they could take commuter planes, which are much smaller planes, out to the outlying islands, see. Or they could go to San Juan and go there and fly into into Venezuela and other South American countries also. So, but what the point I'm trying to make is it was a very, very busy airport, very profitable to start with before they got into this leasing thing. So whether or not they should have gotten into the leasing thing is a big question. Okay. So, anyway, that partnership can be found. We have up on our website now, during this, broadcast, we have ClickOff for the government of Puerto Rico and this Puerto Rican public-private partnership, authority. So, but we have a government over there that's made up of your higher class, well-educated people that are your administrators and educators and people like that. And they are behind the mayor there, okay? And her husband are in support of this public-private partnership, dynamic, see? So all the people got together and they said, we're gonna close ranks and we're gonna support this public-private. So what the public-private partnerships do is it takes infrastructure that's very valuable at times and transfers that into private hands, either through leasing operations or outright purchases. And one of the examples of this would be that all of the major airports in the UK are owned by a Spanish company. I mean owned, lock, stock, and barrel. Now, the UK air regulatory agency over there can set the landing fees, okay? So there is some control there, but the airports in the UK right now are owned by a Spanish investment group. Just to give you an idea of what's happening here is that these people that have control of banks can create credits that own the set of books out of thin air. Then they can take those credits and they can go buy these assets that are real assets and take over control of these infrastructures that are very valuable. One of the examples that occurred under the Thatcher administration when she was prime minister was they started privatizing major things in the UK, and one of those things was the railroad. They actually took the railroads in UK and privatized those, and today there are many critics that say that it was a disaster to even do that. They don't run properly. They have problems with the rail transportation system now in the UK. So, but Thatcher, who was a neoliberal, that's a term that we need to broach here with our listening audience. The neoliberal is not a liberal in the sense that we're using the term. It's a political system idea that believes in free market dynamics, and also they fully support public-private partnerships in the transfer and the takeover of many of our public systems and so forth by private interest, under the assumption and the argument that private enterprise can do it much better and more efficiently. And that is true on some things, okay? But when you're talking about a railroad that's already in place, that's functioning, like in the UK, I don't think that was a wise move in the UK, but they did it, and the results has been catastrophic, according to some critics. So that's what's going on the public-private partnerships. Now, right now, Nadal is a representative in Puerto Rico. He's in the state assembly group. And he's advocating. Remember, we studied odious debt over the years, Charlotte?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the debt the Puerto Rican people are being saddled with can be defined as odious debt.
Well, yeah, and odious debt is debt that was not constitutionally created, okay? According to their constitution and laws of how countries take on debt and create debt for their citizens, see? So Nadal there is saying that he believes that about 75% of the Puerto Rican debt is odious debt. But he's one lone voice in a sea of representatives that are not going to accept that, I don't think. This odious debt is a question to put forward in their legislative bodies and see what they can come up with. But the debt, I mean, people like these hedge fund people, they seized a ship one time that belonged to Argentina. It was in a West African port, and it was their training ship for cadets, naval cadets for Argentina. And these hedge fund operators found out that that ship was in that port, and they stopped it from sailing, and they collected $12 million to keep it from sailing on paying off some of the debt. So they're they get in there. They try to collect hard, you know. And they're like Barracuda's palace. Greg Palace out of New York calls them Barracudas, okay? And I think the bankers up there gave them that name. So some of the bankers don't like the hedge fund operators in New York. And so, you know, it's just a big money-changing racket, isn't it, huh?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm not as well-versed on the Wall Street side as I should be. But I know the money creation problem, and I know the credit problem, and it's just, it's rough. I mean, I just hope the people of Puerto Rico can recover, because this has been traumatic for them, Georgia. Not so much a loss of life, but loss of property, and, you know, right. There was utter devastation, wasn't there?
Yes, there was. What happened was the hurricane came in there, and came in midway in the island. But in these hurricanes, usually the northeast, well, not usually, but in this hemisphere, the northeast quadrant of the hurricane, the winds there are the worst. And so those winds covered a good portion of the east part of the island. And it was just a really high wind anyway, and it really devastated, took off the roofs and stuff. Many of the structures there are made of masonry or cement and so forth. And so rock, cement, whatever they had available there, plus concrete primarily. So stucco, concrete, things like that. So the structures were intact pretty well, but everything, the roof and many of the things like that were blown away, you know. And but I don't think there was a major loss of life. But
no.
But, you know, you have people that are living on a subsistence basis anyway, and then they've lost, you know, their roof, and they're living in the outdoors almost and so forth. So it's really devastating as to, you know, what I mean, them recovering, so to speak. And so it's not a pretty, you know, it's tragic, let's face it. I put forward that we needed to go in with major help, you know, on the Puerto Rican, you know what I mean, country. It's a territory. And that's another question, see, is that you have these groups that are trying to move towards a more sovereign, okay, Puerto Rico, okay? And it's not a state, okay? And it's listed as a territory. Let's see what the official. The government has all this debt, and they in trying to work through this debt, they struck a special agreement with the United States, okay? And basically what that established, okay, was some kind of a plan to start paying off the debt, see, because the creditors want a plan to get the debt paid off because they're holding the bonds, okay? But it's listed as a United States territory, Charlotte, Puerto Rico is. But it's subject to U.S.
laws. Yeah, we have a lot of territory. Yeah, I forgot how that saying goes. I used to know it well. Yeah, states and territories, and that's one of our territories. And I wasn't there when they set it up. And,
yeah,
you know, what's interesting about Puerto Rico, though, George, isn't it also the headquarters of the IRS?
Yes, I think it is. It is, yeah. And some would maintain that the IRS is a private organization, created at the same time the Fed was, see. But the United States and Puerto Rican governments have politically, Puerto Rico is an unincorporated territory of the United States, which, according to the U.S. Supreme Court's insular cases, is a territory belonging to the United States but not a part of the United States within the revenue clauses of the Constitution. The basic question regarding the issue is whether Puerto Rico should remain a U.S. territory, become a U.S. state, or become an independent country. Okay? Those are sort of the choices that they're trying to work through. So, and then you have an economy that is not as weak, okay, anyway, see. And then you've had subsidies and discounts that have been withdrawn, okay, by the federal government. They are subject to federal law, see, U.S. federal law, okay. And so, they're sort of in a state of limbo. See what I'm saying?
Right. And I think there's people on the island that want that to end. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. There are people that want a sovereign status, okay? They don't want to leave the protection, the military protection of the United States totally, because they do want to maintain those security agreements and that security protection, but they want to establish a more sovereign state or territory than they have right now. See, and there have been radicals. There was a terrorist group that tried to assassinate Truman. Okay, and they tried to break into when he was vice president. I'm thinking is when they tried to assassinate him. But Truman was the vice president before he became, the president, see. But he might have been president at the time, but he was staying in, a different, location in the White House. I forget the details. But, those people were apprehended, and put into prison for, long, long years, long prison term, sentences. But you can probably get into the internet and dig down into that. And get more details on it. We have a situation where Puerto Rico has been hit by this hurricane, and it's been devastated. But it's also had a tremendous amount of debt. So where do we go from here, Charlotte? What's your idea?
Well,
yeah.
I want to talk about how I think these storms might be, engineered.
Right. There are people out there that say they can be steered, one person says they can use lasers. The other people would put forward an opinion of HARP or something like that. You heard both of those reasons or techniques?
Yes. I've heard all kinds of reasons. And what is striking is the El Nino and cycle.
Well, there's a long term cycle. There's El Nino and La Nina, and then there's a longer cycle. I'm thinking 15, 20 years. We had that meteorologist on a number of years ago, and he set some of those out for us. But it has to do with cloud cover, things like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Back to Puerto Rico real quick.
Yeah.
You know, that Hurricane Maria, I think, is the one
Maria is the one that hit Puerto Rico. Yeah.
Right. And, I guess
Irma skimmed by. See, the one before that was Irma, and it skimmed by on the north side of Puerto Rico and missed it. Didn't hit it directly. This Maria hit it directly, right about the middle, but going in a northwesterly direction. But some of the winds on that northeast quadrant of the were San Juan was in that area of the northeast quadrant. And that's why you had such heavy damage, in parts of Puerto Rico there,
Right. My understanding is they're still without electricity.
Well, yeah. One opinion put forward that I saw in an article is that they haven't nationalized the electric service yet. But one opinion was that this may be a good reason put forward to privatize the electricity, see. And I went in and looked at some of the bills that they have for electricity, and they're pretty high. They're over $200 per household per month is what I was seeing. And that's a pretty high rate for electricity, And so the charges were very, very excessive, it looked like, okay, for electricity.
Well, so that's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the little money they make, like if a household makes $1,500, they're paying a month. They're paying every penny out that they earn. So there's no real get ahead of the game in Puerto Rico for the right. for the working people.
No, real get ahead of the game in Puerto Rico. Gotcha. The White House hosted an art event for the Hispanic American Spanish. American Hispanic Heritage and month, and they had a wonderful Puerto Rican singer.
Okay.
And she was, putting out some good American feelings.
Well, that's good.
Strategies.
Well, that's great. But you know, we need a Marshall Plan, is what I said on the web. After this happened,
What would be the difference between a Marshall Plan and a Glass-Steagall Plan?
What do you mean, Glass-Steagall?
I'm sorry, did I say that wrong?
Yeah.
Steagall.
Well, Glass-Steagall had a regulatory plan that kept the banks and Wall Street separate, and then under Clinton, they repealed that and allowed the banks to do Wall Street. Buying and selling and speculating, and that's what probably ruined the banks. See, but the Marshall Plan was the plan by General Marshall after World War II. It was named after him to go into Europe and rebuild Europe after the World War II devastation. Okay, and so I just put forward the Marshall Plan as just a general idea, and that's what's really happening now. Anyway, I think that's what Trump is picking up on. And he doesn't have to call it the Marshall Plan for Puerto Rico, just whatever the plan. But, they had a plan underway to reorder and recast or refinance the existing debt in some way to make it more, easier to handle. But now with all this devastation, man, I don't know how they're going to handle this and get the financing.
I don't think Trump knows either.
Yeah, I don't think, there's not a viable economy there to pay the existing debt, much less the debt that's going to be created to rebuild the thing. See what I mean?
Right. What about your idea, George, of community banking?
That would take time, you know. We need something right now that would address rebuilding. We need rebuilding dollars right now. We need homeowners to be able to go to a bank, and not necessarily a community bank, but just go to a lender and have under a special program and borrow amount of money to fix their homes, okay? That would create a lot of work, you know, in Puerto Rico that could be recycled back into the economy. But then at the end of that rebuilding of their homes, whether, you know, the average value they're stating through the taxing authority is about $110,000 per house. Okay, but there's no real estate taxes that I could see over there yet. Okay, but the value of the properties per household or per house is about $110,000. Okay, approximately. So they're probably pretty good sized homes, but they're made up of masonry construction. But I'm sure they need to put a new roof on. Put new windows in, things like that. That's what got blown away, probably. So
and restore electricity.
Yeah, you may be talking about $20,000 to $30,000 just to get the basic things put back in. You know what I mean? Per house, you know. But then that money has to come back to someone to get it paid, or it's got to be written off by the federal government here. Something. You know, we've got to absorb it some way. See what I mean? So. That remains to be seen how that is going to be handled.
Yeah, spending the fiat money with complete abandon.
Yeah. So, but right now it would generate the fix up of the existing homes would generate a tremendous amount of work. And I don't know if they even have, they can work in the evening, after work or whatever and weekends and things. And they can probably, you know, help each other in the, Puerto Rico is made up of a lot of little cities, little towns, okay? And so each little town can come together and start maybe like a habitat plan where they'll go and start fixing someone's house and then the next one and so forth. And if they all collectively come together and they can knock out the repair maybe very quickly on each house. See what I mean? And that might, something like that might work. I'm not sure if anyone's advocating that, but it would
put, they're probably a close enough culture where they could accomplish that kind of community.
The Latino, the Spanish Latino type of culture is a collective culture. Okay.
Hispanic with the H, Hispanic.
Hispanic. It lends itself to coming together like that and as a family group, see, and working on getting, those things fixed. Okay, we've got about 3 minutes left, Charlotte. What's your closing comments on, say, the shooting in Vegas and then some of your ideas or recommendations on Puerto Rico?
Well, again, my condolences to all the victims of the mass shooting. My heart is with you, and you're in my prayers. And also to Puerto Rico, I hope that you get your power and your society where you need it to be.
Okay, Charlotte. Well, I coincide with you on extending our condolences to all those people who lost their loved ones. And some of those stories were heart-wrenching. I mean, I actually listened to some people that were on talk shows and things like that. But also, I went through the list, didn't go through all 58, but however many I looked at, they were individuals. They were from all walks of life. There were law enforcement people in there that got shot, got killed. There were technicians, hospital workers, individuals, students. I mean, it just ran the gamut of society. So they were there enjoying some good country music, a good evening out there in Vegas, and all of a sudden this was unleashed on them. Very, very evil act. And we just got to get down to the bottom of it. And we must encourage all those people that are working in the casinos, whether it's Mandalay or whatever, to come forward with any knowledge that they might have and get it out. Get on a talk show. Get on whatever talk show they can find and phone in and give their opinion or their knowledge about what, really happened there. Otherwise, we're just going to have this thing covered up by government or whatever, and we're never going to get to the bottom of it, And I just hope it's not part of an American Gladio project or something like that. And that would be the worst case, scenario.
I'm going to go on and read this LaRouche proposal for Puerto Rico.
He has one already?
I think so, yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
Well,
we can send you a link and we can post it for the listeners.
We'll have a link up then, after the show's, ended. I'll get that link up. And so the, listening audience can go in and look at that and sort of, we need input from all kinds of different groups. And I'll say Lyndon LaRouche has always been there in infrastructure stuff. I don't agree politically with his socialism and whatever, but, he has proposed infrastructure and development on a large scale for many projects throughout the world. So I can't say that I disagree with that. Well, Charlotte, I want to say good evening to you. And, man, thank you for everything and your opinions and everything on this. And let's just hope and pray for those people, those families that lost their loved ones, okay?
God bless America. God bless you, George. Thank you.
God bless you, Charlotte.